Welcome to the Laugh Life Podcast, a lifestyle podcast based on living alcohol-free in a booze-soaked world. My name is Kelly Evans, and together with my friends, Tracy Georgievic, Mike Sutton, and Lindsay Herrick, we share uncensored, unscripted, real conversations about what our lives have been like since we ditched alcohol and how we got here. By sharing our individual stories, we'll show you that there isn't just one way to do this. No matter where you are on your journey, from sober curious to years in recovery and everyone in between, you are welcome here. No judgment and a ton of support. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Laugh Life Podcast, Season 2, Episode 4. We have a guest tonight, Jamie. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Hey, everybody.
Yo.
Hey. Hi, Jamie.
Hello, hello, hello.
Jamie and I met a little over 3 years ago when he sold my house when I got separated. And we hit it off as friends and we definitely connected. I was probably only about a year and a half sober at that time, so still felt pretty new to it all and starting a new life. And we had a good friendship. And then a couple of years later, we dated for a bit. And that was just a little over a year ago. And now here we are. And am I right, Jamie, you just celebrated your 11-year alcohol-free?
Yeah, 11th, September 25th, 2011 is my...
Congratulations.
Whoa. Amazing. Wow. That's huge.
Yeah. So why don't we start off with maybe tell us a little bit about where you grew up and how you grew up, if there was alcohol in the home or wherever you want to start.
Yeah, for sure. So I was born in Calgary in 1977, November 4th at 1:45 a.m. I'm the youngest of two older brothers. I'm the youngest. My dad worked for CBC. So I went from Calgary to Edmonton to Ottawa and then to Winnipeg in 1988. I was in grade 3. When we came to Winnipeg, and I've been here ever since. The only alcoholic was my grandfather. Yeah. So when do you want me to get into the good stuff?
Whenever you want. When were you first introduced to alcohol?
I was introduced to alcohol, I think when I was 12. I'd always go upstairs and have a sip of my mom's beer and Clamato juice. And I'd always go back downstairs and I'm at this feeling. I was like, oh my God, I feel good. What I know now, it was 12 years of being non-existent, not being seen. So that little bit of alcohol, that one sip just made me, that knot in my stomach went away for a bit. And I just went, oh, I breathe. It got me out of survivor mode, which I know what survivor mode is now, but not back then. And then I had my first drinking drunk when I was 13 with my friend Brendan. It was in my backyard at my parents' place. And back then, it was kind of like acceptable to buy a six-pack of Budweiser and do shotguns and look how drunk Jamie is, blah, blah, blah. And that was it. I never had a drink after that I didn't want to get absolutely blacked out. Sure, I tried to manage it and I tried to manipulate it, but that was it. I remember that night I went to a high school party. So I was probably in grade 9 and I woke up with my pants off for some reason in the bathroom and they were covered in urine. Aww. I guess the older guys peed on my pants. I was so drunk. But the point was the next day when I woke up, I wanted more. You know,
yeah.
That experience did not say to me, well, Jamie, because I wanted more, because when I had alcohol in my system, I wasn't in survivor mode. Maybe I existed a bit more in my own mind, but when I wasn't drinking, I just sunk back to a boy with no voice, a boy that was a burden, and just a boy that was so, so, so lost.
So. And is that survivor mode? Like when you say survivor mode, like elaborate on that. What does that mean to you when you say that?
Well, I know now survivor mode is I've been in survivor mode since the day I came out of my mom's womb. And the survivor mode is that feeling of fear and not being safe, not being heard, not being expressed. So I'm just surviving every day to get affection, to get love, to get someone just to encourage me, someone just give me a fucking hug, right? So that survivor mode, which I didn't know, went all the way through up until God, I'm still in survivor mode. I'm aware of it now. I work on it. My nerves, that's the beauty of recovery, is you just keep on going and peeling off layers of yourself. It's fucking amazing. But looking back to my childhood and my teenager years, I had no idea how I felt, why I felt. And now I can put a reason why I felt how I felt.
Do you think that was because you were the youngest child, Jamie? A lot of parents or people say by the time the third one comes around, we just didn't care. We just let them do whatever.
There is some truth to that. I was born in 77. My mom is a farm girl. My mom's is a family oriented. So her parents lived on a farm outside of Edmonton. She was a farmer girl. Family was everything. And when she married my dad, she went to Ottawa. So my mom picked up from the farm and went to Ottawa out of all places. They didn't know anyone. My dad was working. We were always kind of struggling. And so my poor mom, I can just only imagine what she was feeling. So I have compassion for her because it must have been so hard with three kids going across the country away from her parents. I remember Christmas Eve mom crying and I never understood why, but now I get it. Yeah. So was my emotions a priority? No. They did the best they got. They didn't do it on purpose, but there was way more important things in my parents' life, like surviving, making sure we had food on the table, making sure Jamie coming home from school being bullied, that wasn't a priority. I never spoke up. I have empathy for my parents and I have compassion for my parents. And it's what I believe now is ancestry too. My mom's mom are both down the line. So yeah, it helps me to show that compassion and to look through someone else's eyes. You look at someone else's eyes, you feel what they must have felt. You feel. And I give my parents props because, fuck, I couldn't move down the street with Grace right now without stressing out, let alone across the country.
Who's Grace?
Grace is my daughter. She's 9.
I was going to ask, do you have kids of your own?
Yeah, Grace is 9. Sobriety date is the 25th of September 11th, and she's May 5th, 2013.
Wow.
I even conceived her with no alcohol in my system. And she's not my sobriety girl. That's what I picked up in AA when I first went. She's just my Grace.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. So you went to AA. You did. Tell us about that, because I know for myself, I didn't do any meetings. I didn't do AA. I sometimes question, like, I don't feel like I align with it really. So, but it's always interesting. I like to hear about how people, I guess, got on the path to recovery, and AA was part of that story for you.
I didn't get on the path. I fucking fell into it. I'll give you a quick time frame. So when I was first drinking when I was 13 in grade 9, and then I started to do what most teenager boys did, and it was acceptable: drinking on the weekends, getting drunk, coming home, driving, but not knowing that I would be so full of shame and guilt even in grade 10, 11, that I would be so, what did I say? What did I do? I was so full of guilt at a young age, and I kept on going. And then after high school, one thing that I understand is my spirit is something that has gotten me to where I am today. And my spirit back then, I didn't understand what it was, but I knew something wasn't right with me. And then all I was trying to get after high school is just to be noticed, just to, like, someone say to me, wow, look at Jamie. So I went traveling. I got a work visa and I went to the UK to work for 2 months. Once I got there, again, this is all alcohol. I left with 300 pounds, worked in pubs. And then when I went to the UK after a month, no one is really missing me. You know what I mean? So I kept on going. I kept on going. So when I tell people I travel the world for 3.5 years, everyone's like, oh my God, must've been crazy. I just was getting people's approval. It's all I wanted.
Wow.
The good part about it was I went to Israel. I lived in Jordan. I went to Egypt. I'm like, come on, someone's got to come back home and say, Jamie's so awesome. Nothing. In fucking Jerusalem, I'm getting held up by a knife just because I want someone from back home to say, look at Jamie. He is something.
Yeah.
Like, I had no worth. Then I went to Thailand. I'm like, oh, Thailand should do it. So I went to Thailand. This is back in 2000. There's no phones, nothing. No, just went. I didn't have barely any money. And after 3 years, I came back home because my brother was getting married. And when I was traveling, though, I spent every penny on alcohol, every single penny. I don't know how I made it back alive. I think I made it back alive by the grace of God, universe or something. I should not be here right now. I did some things that I should be dead.
Yeah.
So when I came back to Winnipeg, I was 24. And then I remember going out that night with all my friends from high school before I left, and no one gave a fuck about where I was. And I was like, oh. Are you kidding me? Like, I was in Israel, Jordan. They're like, where's that? I'm like, so, like, they're not getting that approval, right? And then after 2 months of being in Winnipeg, I felt lost. So what I was doing was I was just running. So I went to Bermuda, I worked in Bermuda for a year. My drinking picked up more and more and more. I got kicked off the island because I was very drunk at a bar. They had a camera and I was stealing drinks, which is normal for a guy like me. Then I came back home for like 2 more months and still no one's really giving me any attention, any approved encouragement. And I went to Jasper and I worked in Jasper for 3 years, snowboarding. And it sounds glorious, snowboarding and golfing the summer and making great money. But that's when I just, because you're surrounded by the people that just drink, right? So it got worse and worse. And then I was serving a table. This is how lost I was. I was like 28. I was serving a table in Jasper of two realtors. And they were the typical realtor, like fucking the gold watches, fucking mustache. The guy was just fucking, I just loved it. Because I had no role model growing up. I didn't know who I was. They say that spirit comes in to people and gives you a lesson or guidance. And that is one of them. He looked at me after serving him and his wife for 10 minutes. He's like, you got a great personality. You're fucking good looking. You should become a realtor. And that's how I became a realtor. I trusted some guy I just served because I had no direction in my life. I was so lost. Mm-hmm. So when I came back, I got my license and then started with real estate. And then when I started with real estate, fuck, that's when life happened. I wasn't serving steaks no more. And then I met Melissa, Grace's mom. Mm-hmm. I was working at Earl's and we bought a house. And then I always say, I'm like Victor Newman from Young and the Restless. I would come home and just needing it. And that's when it really escalated because I felt like I'm in an adult world, but I'm a fucking 9-year-old. And then I also had absolutely no worth, absolutely no confidence. I didn't even believe in myself. So I was just always acting. Whoever you want me to be, I'll be. And neglecting myself. So many years. And that was in 2008. And from 2008 to my sobriety date was when the drinking was just, it just got to the point where my last year, I was drinking at 2-6 before I would leave the house.
Holy cow. Wow.
The partner of an alcoholic is someone that doesn't get any respect because they see everything, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard on them, but everyone looks at the person with the problem, me. But it was me and her. We didn't want to tell that secret because I knew if people started knowing how I was drinking, then I couldn't drink like that. And Melissa, loved her to death. She was a 31-year-old woman. She didn't know how to deal with what I was doing. I was manipulating. I was doing everything. And she was embarrassed, which is totally cool. I get it. But at the last year, in 2009, I knew I wasn't going to make it. I'd wake up and the first thought would be, I'd be shaking. And I'd be like, fuck, if I drink today, Jamie, I'm going to fucking die. But I'm like, if I don't drink, like, fuck, what am I going to do? And I would be shaking. Yeah. Sweating. And the minute she left the door, I would crawl to the fucking kitchen and go in the freezer. And I just needed that vodka to go right down me. That was like, oh, then once I had that, I could have a shower. And then all of a sudden I needed more. And then I would be like, okay, Jamie, this is the day. You're going to just go get in your car, drive down Bishop or no, down the Primner, because I live in St. Norbert, and just drive into a telephone pole. Like, fuck it. You're not going to stop drinking because you can't. It's impossible. You can't go minutes without drinking. Mm-hmm. That was 2009. I felt so alone. And now I look back at it, I think I had a lot of spiritual guidance. There was times where I would be driving and I wouldn't hear anything, nothing, silent. And I would see people's mouths and I'd just be like, I was there, but I wasn't there. And then I went for lunch with a friend, a good buddy of mine, and I sat across the table from my sponsor that would have been. I remember we went to the Garwood Grill. And of course, so like I've been drinking vodka every day for my life. Monday morning at like 11, my face is fucking red. All my blood vessels, my nose was just, I looked like a mess. So much cologne on me because I'm smoking cigarettes like it's no tomorrow. Very unhealthy and shaking. And all I needed was to pretend to be like, hey, yeah, things are good. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All I was thinking about was I just need a drink.
Yeah.
And then I sat across from Lori and he looks at me and he's like, oh, He was a tough love. You like to drink, eh? And then I'm like, oh, and of course I lied. And he's like, I've been sober for 22 years. And my first thing was like, fuck, really? I'm like, how the fuck do you do? You just take over. So that was my introduction to AA. So I had his number. I had his number, right? I continue going to my daily activities, which would be drinking at least, I'd go to the LC, I'd get a 2-6 immediately. I'd get two pocket Mickeys to put in my car. I'd get two Mickeys to put in the fridge. And then I would wash my car so my license plates are clean. And I'd go get a big Sprite bottle from Sev, fill it up all with street vodka. I'd always dress like I'm going somewhere. So if the cops saw me, this is the amount of work. This is like how I lived.
Yeah. That's exhausting.
I was just going to say that.
I'm exhausted hearing it.
Meanwhile, I got Melissa calling me being like, because she thinks it's all, hey, how you doing? I'm just busy with work.
Right.
And I would just drive and drink, drive and drink. And then so exhausting. But I knew I had Lori's number. And then a year later, June 23rd, 2010, I was at the LC in Keniston. It was a Saturday morning. It was a fucking beautiful morning. Sun was out. Sky was blue. It was like 9 a.m. And I remember pulling in the parking lot and I'm like, oh, I gotta get my vodka. And I see families going to sober. Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with me? So I go to the LC and I always had a lie that I was going golfing. So I'd always wear a golf shirt and I'm going golfing. So I'd buy all my stuff. I got in the car and I just called Lori. I'm like, hey, Lori, it's Jamie. He's like, I can meet you in 20 minutes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So we met at Robin's and I was scared because I'm like, fuck, sure. I need to drink. I need to, is this it? Is this no more drinking for me? And I sat across from him at the table and it was the first time I didn't feel alone. And he told me a story. I was like, fuck, really? And he says to me, he's like, so go home, drink all the booze you got in your car. Cause he was just like, yeah, oh, fuck. I'm like, I can't. He's like, you can do whatever you want, Jamie. So that was my introduction. So he took me to a meeting that night. And I remember sitting down and I walked in and I was like, holy fuck, these are people that they're not what I thought they were. I was judging everyone.
Yeah.
I heard stories and people were laughing and I was like, wow. So of course I did 2 days of AA and then just fucking back out. So from 2010, June 23rd to my sobriety date, I was in and out. That was the fucking hardest year of my life. I would go to AA for a week. I'd come back out and I'd get so, to the point where I was hoping I would die because I had so much guilt and shame to go back to AA. But I would keep on going back and everybody was welcoming, but it didn't matter. I felt fucking terrible.
So wait a second. So you would go to AA and when you said you'd come out, would you then start drinking again?
Well, Lori introduced me to AA.
Yeah.
To a meeting, but I wasn't ready yet. So I'd go to
AA. Okay.
And I'm like, oh my God, like, this is awesome.
This is awesome. Yeah.
But then like, it doesn't matter. My 33 years of emotions in my body was crazy. I couldn't be me.
Yeah.
I couldn't just be me with nothing in it. So I would just be holding on for dear life for like 2 days. And then when I went back out, back to drinking, it was even worse.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I can't take this. So I did that for a whole year while, this sounds so fucking funny, while we decided to get married. So we're planning a wedding. My business in real estate was, thank God it was still working, but I was giving it a lot, but I was bankrupt on every level, lying to Melissa, being like, yeah, we do the wedding. Oh yeah, get whatever you want. Because my only value back then was just the big shotism. Like, look at me, I'm a big guy, you know? Meanwhile, I don't have two pennies to rub together. I'm fucking trying to deal with me. That was just in me. And it was a hell of a year, but it was probably the best year of my life. So we did that. And then September, back and out, back and forth, Melissa had enough. She's like, fuck, Jamie, do something. I'm like, I can't. I don't have to say. And she's like, going out with the girls to so-and-so's cabin. This was in the second week in September. And right away, I'm like, fuck, okay, perfect. This is it. I already planned out. And she's like, just don't fucking drink. So she went on that Friday and I made sure that she was like past the perimeter. So she wouldn't come back. And this was like leaving Las Vegas. I was so happy. I had a shower. Again, probably maybe 2-6s in, but I can still walk around and chill. And I had a shower. I got dressed up. I was going to the LC and I was going to drink myself to death. I got a shopping cart and I was just like fucking throwing in wine. I was so happy. It came back home. It was beautiful day in the fall, and I shut all the blinds and I just drank, and I would barf. I would get sick. I woke up on Saturday morning in my own, you know, and I was so happy because nobody was there. Right. And that I could start drinking immediately. I did that all day Saturday. And meanwhile, Melissa was trying to call me and I didn't answer my phone and blinds were shut. And I was just hoping that I just wouldn't wake up. I really was. So when she came back, she walked in and she's like, the best thing she did, she's like, I'm calling our parents. And I knew that was right there. I'm like, fuck no. And
it's over. Yeah.
Parents came and I said, as an alcoholic, I'm going to give you, right? And I went to AA. And well, before that, the day before the 25th, I came home and it was the first time in my life where I was so just done. And I went to the bedroom to change and heart's racing. And like it always did, if I didn't have alcohol in me, I just got on my knees right from my dresser. I was like, fuck, I need help. Just please help me. I don't know who I was. I did nothing. And I got up and I just fell in my bed, had a nap, I woke up. Went to a meeting that night and I never had a desire to drink ever again. Yeah. And like, I'm honest, I would tell you.
It's incredible.
Call it Joanne. I think for me, it was just, I was just absolutely done with no luring thoughts. I just was done. That was the easy part. The hard part was the next couple years, you know? So let's start the journey. And I would go to AA. In the morning's meeting from 9:30, I'd go to the evening meetings. In between, I would just fucking hold on and just try to fucking live. I couldn't go into grocery stores. I couldn't go anywhere in public because what if people saw me? Still trying to work, still like answering, hey, yeah, like, oh, just like, it just, oh. And then I made it to 3 months, Christmas Day. And wow. I was all happy because I'm, oh yeah, I'm not drinking, life is good. And then in February, I found out that Melissa had like a little affair with someone, a trainer, that lasted, well, when we got married in August.
Yeah.
The advice I got from the people in my life that time, if I look back at it, wasn't the best advice. What that did for me was it made me feel so worthless, not good enough. Just because you stop drinking does not mean, like, stop drinking is the easiest part. It's the easiest part. Just don't put alcohol in your mouth. That really affected me. Just made me feel like I just wasn't worth it. Wasn't good enough. But I kept on going back to my spirit. I had so many reasons my first 2-3 years of my sobriety that I could have drunk. I had so many reasons. But my spirit was the just didn't let me. I didn't want to. I had to feel all the feels that I had to feel in my first 2-3 years. I had to. It was the hardest. I don't wish that upon anyone. I don't. It was almost easier drinking vodka every day. But then you start seeing some progress. And then you think, oh, fuck, it's been 3 years. I'm good. Well, yeah, you don't drink, but you're fucked up in every part of your life. You don't have a relationship. You don't know how to do nothing because you won't. Showing it. And then so my like the 3 years of my sobriety was just AA nonstop. I was fucking doing everything I could, and then I needed more, so I stopped going to AA and I stopped searching. And then for 3 or 4 years I put myself in positions with other people that took advantage of me, that made me feel like I wasn't worthy. And then it wasn't until the past maybe 3-4 years that I really I've become so a new person, more authentic. Even today, even last week, I undiscovered something about my childhood. And that's the beauty of sobriety is like, fuck, I'm so grateful I was an alcoholic, because if I wasn't, fuck, I'd just be going through the everyday life with nothing. So uncovering who I am and that I do exist now. I do exist. And don't get me wrong, like, fuck, there's many days I don't think I do still, but I catch myself. It's a fucking beautiful journey. It really fucking is. And I have a daughter fucking throughout it who never had a lot of say in my marriage. But one thing I did was, her name's fucking Grace. That's it. Hey, fuck, I'm not fucking.
That's awesome.
Her name is Grace.
Yeah.
And the best thing about Grace is, which I, with some the therapy I've been through, is she is my inner child. How beautiful is that? I've been giving her everything that I needed as a child, unknowing it until maybe 3 or 4 years ago when it was brought to my attention. I was like, fuck yeah, giving her the safety, giving her the love, the encouragement, protection, making sure she had a voice. She still has a voice, making sure she exists. I see her. That's the beauty of it all. Not just me, mm-hmm. what I can pass on to like a human being where 11 years ago, I couldn't even go in the fucking grocery store. And now I'm raising a daughter? Like, fuck. I have a fantastic relationship with her mom now. Great. I forgive. Like, it's fucking beautiful. It's beautiful. I could have just been a dry drunk for all these years, but the spirit, it always comes to me when I meditate. It's my spirit wants me to do better things than just what I think I should do.
We have so many different names for that on this show.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Mike calls it the little voice.
Yeah.
The little voice, your intuition, your knowing. Like,
we all know what's right and wrong. Like, yeah. I knew when I was fucking pounding at 2-6 in the shower, I wasn't being like, oh, this is a great. No, I knew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We always know.
The shame comes. And then, like, you tie that into a childhood of always wanting to fit in, but you never fit in. I got teased. I was called names. I got bullied. I was overweight. Mm-hmm. I was never popular. Nobody, like, you know what I mean? And
Jamie, do you think that your experiences, I mean, maybe experience isn't the right word, but your life, in a way, it was there to teach you something. Now you're talking about teaching your daughter and being there for your daughter. I'm relating not a lot of what you're talking about, but some of it. You're like the sacrificial lamb. It's the way I feel. Like, I had to endure a lot of crap in order to get to a certain point where I'm okay with the shit that I did. And I went through a lot of shit, not to the extent that you did, because we all have our own stories.
It's the same shit, though. It doesn't matter. It's the same
shit. Yeah, same shit, different level, different journey, for sure. But do you think that in any way, because you seem to kind of hint on the spirituality side of things, and I kind of go down that road too. I meditate. I follow certain people. And one of the things that Kelly and I kind of connected on when we first connected was Reiki. We talked about Reiki and those types of things. And if I ever told my buddies I did Reiki, they'd be like, what the fuck's wrong? Like, are you, what the fuck, dude? I mean, what's wrong with you? None of them really know, right? Not that I go and talk about it, but I feel more confident now in saying, oh yeah, I've done this, I've done that. Gone to therapy for 4 years, revealed so many things. It was the greatest thing I ever did. So back to you, do you think that being bullied and all those things growing up, that it was kind of meant to be in some kind of way for you to grow spiritually, if you will?
Yeah, everything in life is a lesson. Everything, standing in line at Sobeys when it's busy, is a lesson. If you look at that.
Yes. Oh my God.
You
so
know,
true.
Like meeting
patience.
Someone.
Yeah. Just like how you react, even. Like, it's interesting the things that piss you off.
Oh,
some people
learning.
Some people just stand in line, no big deal. And others, you can just like look at them and be like, this person's going to lose their shit in 2 seconds if it doesn't move. And that person's usually me.
Yeah, no, you're right. And like everything in my life has led me up to this moment right now on this day at 8:10. And the only difference from me and anyone else is I'm aware of it. I'm not embarrassed by it. And I acknowledge it. Awareness is 90% of the healing. Fuck. I've had so many moments. I had one last week when we're talking about protection and safety. It just boom. And all of a sudden tears come and like, fuck. But tears of like, hey, now that's another thing that I just uncovered about myself. And that's making me truer to be my authentic self. I don't give a rat's ass. I wear fucking more crystals than fucking anyone. I tell everyone what I do. I'm not embarrassed, but I also surround myself with people who are like me. I fucking go to Reiki. I go to energy healings. I do fucking weird things, but my weird things make me happy.
Yeah.
Other things that made me happy before was fucking drinking vodka and wanting to drive off the bridge. And I thought
but that's normal to everybody in society. Right. Whereas, as you quote unquote weird things, it's like, don't knock until you try it, the way I say it.
The weirder you are, the fucking more I love you. Like, be fucking weird. Like, get out there. Fucking burn incense. Fucking do what you gotta do. Hug a tree. Lay around on your bare feet. Thing that, for me at least, it took a lot because also my line of work, I'm not the typical stereotype person. And I will not, I spent all my life being whatever you wanted me to be that I never was me And now I meet my authentic self that I every day am. That's my goal, is to get even more authentic, more authentic. And the more authentic I'm getting, it's fucking so freedom. I don't have to worry about being a character. If you don't like me, that's okay. I still love you. We'll move on. Fuck, we don't align. But guess what? I'm not going to change who I am because I want your approval.
That's exhausting. Mm-hmm. Always having to change and alter who you are because you feel like you want or need or crave that attention. And here's the thing with alcohol, it stops spiritual growth. It's a barrier between you and for God or you and universe. Like, you can't have a healthy, loving life when you're drinking. And the other thing too is, and we still do this, when we look at people who are consuming too much alcohol, it's like, oh, well, what's wrong with them? No, fuck. The substance is designed to be addictive. It's what it does to our brain. So you are actually having a normal response to consuming the substance. And I read a stat, 1 in 10 people who actually consume alcohol for the first time will become addicted. 1 in 10.
Wow.
Like, that's fucking crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Probably even more now with social media.
See, I don't think once I was told that you were born with alcoholism. This is my own opinion, is I wasn't.
I've heard that too.
Addicted to alcohol. What I was addicted to was not being me.
And
not being
me. Jamie! I have to write that down. I wasn't addicted to alcohol. What I was addicted to is not being me. Fuck.
It's titles. People give you a title. You're an alcoholic. I'm not a fucking alcoholic.
Oh, that makes me cry.
When I go out and I hang out with, I don't care how old you are or whatnot. If you're fucking cool, we go to raves, it's fine. A lot of younger people, right? And when I see guys drinking a lot, they always come up to me and they're always like, oh my God, how old are you? Your beard? And the first thing I say to them, I'm like, how was your childhood? First thing I say, and some guys will be up and they'll be like, well, and they'll let it spurt. I believe, and I do, it's your childhood. If you have a lot of emotional trauma, whatever it was, if you had that alcohol, it took that away, like it took me away. If there's no such thing as a healthy childhood, but I had a childhood, let's say that I'm giving to Grace, for example, that I knew that I mattered. And again, I love my parents, but if I knew I mattered, if I had confidence, if I had encouragement, again, this is early 80s, right? Fuck, we're all the same Gen Z. All side, come back. And it's funny, people joke about it where they're like, oh yeah, we used to smoke my dad's cigarettes and alcohol. And I get irate because that's where most of the suffering happened.
Yeah.
You know, so if I see people drinking a lot and they're out of control, I show them compassion. I look through their eyes and I'm like, they're hurting. They're hurting.
Yes.
Yes.
They're
It's a trauma thing too.
Nobody wants to go out. Nobody wants to get dressed, especially women. Do your hair, do your makeup.
You guys puke in it?
Beautiful.
And wake up in your own barf? No.
Exactly. Nobody wants to do that, right? And they're like, oh, I'm an addicted. For me, I wasn't addicted. The more I drank, the more I was out of myself. Until the next day, I was like, oh, fuck, Evan comes back again. I'm like, oh, God. So what happens is I used to drink on a Tuesday. It just got closer like this. So my last 3 years, it was just one big fucking drunk every day. I did not want to be myself. So you take
that's how uncomfortable you were. You literally had to drink every day just to stay out of yourself. That's how
I had to smoke cigarettes. I had to do cocaine. I had to do anything. Meanwhile, trying to get everyone just to fucking like me. Just someone please like me. Someone give me encouragement. Someone just please give me something.
Just desperate.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jamie, I was going to ask, you did do hard drugs?
You know what? I only did drugs when I was fucking wasted.
Yeah.
Gateway drug for me is alcohol. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I've done lots of stuff and I'd agree that I wouldn't go out and do the stuff I did unless I was drunk.
No. A good friend of mine, actually, he passed away 2 weeks ago. We used to drink all the time together in high school and he was into some hard drugs too. And then like, you get a call from high school guys.
Holy shit.
So-and-so has passed. And the first thing I thought about was I loved the guy, but he never experienced what true life is.
Mm. And some people never do. Isn't that the sad part, Jamie? Think about that. Some people continue this life until they fucking die.
Because the thing is, and I'm glad I hit rock bottom, everyone that I know, like they're functional alcoholics. They have their nose is just like this above the water. It's all good.
Yeah.
It's all good. And that's what most people are. Like, we can get by, it's good, because they don't want to eliminate it completely and then sit with those feelings, those emotions, go to therapy, cry every day, all that stuff that is so rewarding, but so fucking painful. But pain is good after a while. That's how you become who you are. And you can stand up and have a voice and speak your values and your truth. One thing that I've picked up is people don't know who the fuck they are no more. They'll just do whatever. And I used to be one of them. Oh, yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. Oh, let's do that. No one knows what their purpose is.
It's worse now. I think it's really interesting that you were talking about when you were young and you were traveling and trying to get approval. Our last episode that we recorded, just the four of us, we were talking about social media and how it's such a, people are searching for dopamine hits and, you know, the likes and all that stuff. So you were on that journey before social media. It's a thing. It didn't take social media for us to need that approval from people. If we don't know who we are and we're not happy with who we are, then we're looking for it somewhere other than within ourselves, which is where it is.
Coping mechanisms too.
Yeah.
I always tell people, don't get hard on yourself. The world is designed for us to feel less than, for us to feel we're not good enough, and for us to feel like we're missing out or on an uphill battle. So be nice to yourself. But realizing that, you know what, it takes more work. But once you're there, you're the Matrix. You don't care about all that. But
money. It's all these companies, like when women feel like shit about themselves, you know, they're trying to sell you makeup and Botox and fillers and liposuction and implants and alcohol. Oh, look at all these people. They're having so much fun. And you're right. It's designed to keep you feeling in lack and insufficient, and you're not good enough, and you never will be unless you do this and this.
Now do that lens with someone. Let's see, I'll use myself example, growing up with no self-worth, not good enough
right
into a society. Now you see people with anything to fill that inside that they're good enough.
For sure.
And then it's not good enough. Chasing, chasing,
for chasing.
What the fuck chasing. Are we chasing for?
Yeah.
Chase the inside. The outside was changed. Yeah, change, chase this, uncover layers with you, my line of work. Let's just fucking chase for what? You have no peace inside you, no happiness, no joy. What are you doing it all for? And the truth is, when someone dies, like, yeah, they come to your funeral. Half your friends won't come because they're probably busy. Mm-hmm. A month later, people will start, even weeks will start getting on with their life, and they might think of you once in a while. After a year, nobody fucking remembers you anyways. So why do we live a life for everyone else? Why do we live a life to please this person, please that person? Fuck it. Yeah. That's where I'm at. Authentic. Be who the fuck
love
you
it.
Want to be. And as long as you don't hurt anyone, be who you want to be. Don't hurt anyone and be fucking a good human being. It's a very simple process to live a life.
I think a lot of people are addicted to self-sabotage for some reason. I've been guilty of it and probably still have.
I'm still guilty of it. Yeah.
Me
but
too.
How do we go? Alcohol is part of it. Food, drugs, blah, 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 blah. Gambling, sex, all that stuff. And it's, how do we get to that ultimate, like you say, it's almost like that's that inner center of freedom.
It's
mental freedom. It's a goddamn life struggle, man.
Everything that we struggle with right now, for me again, it goes back to my childhood. You have all the answers.
Yeah.
If you have a self-sabotage attitude right now, go back to your childhood. When was there times in your childhood that, you know, were you encouraged to do great things and did you get rewarded? Or was it just neglected and had no voice? Well, why the fuck would you do something in your adult life now? You're just fucking self-sabotage. It feels better. It's everything goes back to childhood. Every fucking thing goes back to childhood.
Well, it's like you said, peeling layer. It's like peeling off leaves of a cabbage, right? Like,
exactly.
You got to get to the core. I totally agree with you.
3 weeks ago, me and Grace, I talked to Grace. My downfall maybe is I talk to her like this. I don't change. Like, fuck, I talk to her. I always tell the truth. I don't know why parents lie that there's a Santa Claus. Your caregivers are people.
Wait, what?
But you think of it. In a nutshell, we're raised to have a child, and the child looks at their caregivers like, oh my God, you're everything. And what do? We lie to them.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And then when they find out Santa Claus isn't real, it's kind of like a joke, like, ha ha ha. But that little child who had all your trust in the caregivers lied to you.
Yeah.
What else are they lying to you about? Anyways, we went to Sellers on Pembina Highway, me and Grace, mm-hmm. and we had our meal, and in fact, we just had a good time, and we go in the back where we were parked, and I was parked facing this way, and there, I got in the front seat, and I had to do some texting before I was driving, and Grace is in the back, and I see a guy on the sidewalk, probably a good human, but he's on something, he looked pretty, yeah. not the nicest guy, and then I'm like this in my car, and then all of a sudden I hear I'm coming in, and he was right opening up the passenger door. And they talk about dad power, talk about spirit. I just immediately, I didn't lose it. I got out my car. He was big too. I wasn't planning on doing this, but I just fucking puffed up. And I was like, get away from my car, walk down the street. I didn't yell. I was calm. And I told him three times, and he was kind of delirious. And he's like, oh, I thought you were my ride. And then he finally walked down the street. I look in the back seat, and Grace is so immediately aww. I knew, okay, there's a belief right there. I got to get on this right off the bat. So we talked about it. I said she was protected. We still talked about it. I even told her, Grace, what can I do to make you feel more safe? I'm like, I'm the strongest dad in Winnipeg. Like, fuck, I will be strong. That's another positive fucking way to live because of the journey, all that pain that I went through. I can do that now to Grace.
And you're breaking the cycle. That's so powerful, Jamie. I had so much chaos and chaos in my childhood. And that is one thing my sister and I talk about a lot, is that nobody ever came and said, are you okay?
Are you okay? What's this or ask you a question like, Kelly, what can we do, Kelly, to make you feel
I never had that either.
I'd be like, holy fuck, this is great.
Yeah, good for you, Jamie.
That's awesome. Only because of the awareness and the old. Yeah. I always tell a lot of guys that move your fucking ego aside. Mm-hmm. Fucking get rid of it. Be vulnerable. No one's going to think any less of you. You know what I mean? Like, get it out. Get deep inside you. Why do you feel that way? Like, it's okay to let go. You're not the most important person in the fucking world. It's way bigger than what you think. I still have friends who are my age who treat their wives like it's 1950. I'm like, what the fuck are you guys doing? That's all they know, you know? You can't judge. I'm not judging anyone. Yeah. You got to look through their eyes. And if it works for them, it works for them.
You can break the cycle. You don't have to do what's familiar and what you learn. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And we all have this beautiful star like right in us, like fucking beams, but we have clouds too. Sometimes clouds are over my star. Doesn't mean my star isn't gone. It just means the clouds are there. I got to push them away. You know what I mean? So you have bright skies, blue skies and shining, but clouds will come and go always throughout life, but you just don't want them to stay for weeks and weeks and weeks. But we're all fucking shooting stars. We're all fucking magical. No one's different.
I have two questions. You said early on in this talk that your grandpa was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
So my question is, how did you know that? How did you know that as a child that your grandpa was an alcoholic? And my second question, which I can remind you of, because I know when I get asked too many questions, I'm like, what was the question? But I want to know how you knew that your grandpa was an alcoholic, like what made him an alcoholic? And it's Melissa, right?
Grace's mom, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So when she called your parents, what did they say? What was their reaction to Melissa's call? So those are two things that are in my brain.
Yeah, first question, I would go to my Gigi and Baba, because I'm Ukrainian, their farm in the summer. It was well known that my grandfather was an alcoholic. My mom, you know what I mean? And
okay.
I wasn't the brightest kid, but I used to cut the grass. And every time I'd go this way and turn around, passed out. It wasn't.
Oh,
it
was all, yeah.
You know, and then he would fight. I used to think my grandfather was up here. And now I look at it like, fuck, my poor Baba, my poor fucking little. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I knew that he was an alcoholic, but I didn't know. I just thought he just drank lots. I didn't know why people drink. Mm-hmm. If I knew why he, like, I would be probably drinking sooner. Second question, when I told my mom and dad, it was not really. They just said, well, good for you. We're proud of you. And that's that. So I basically, by no means am I having a pity party here, but I did it on my own. I didn't have friends I have now in my life where I could call and be like, I'm not feeling too well.
Yeah.
It was all in my head. And I had a good therapy session last week. And she asked me, she's like, well, who would you go to talk, to share things? And like right now, I just go for walks with myself. I've been doing it all my life. Walking home from grade 3, packing it just in my head, just me. I didn't reach out to anyone. So a good thing. But now I share lots with other people because it's good to voice it, get that it's a vibration that you, you know, like our voice, like our bodies are magical, but like it's a vibration. It vibrates when you're getting it out of your mouth, out into the energy. You got to get it out, not in here. I always tell people, never fucking worry alone. Don't worry alone.
Oh, I like fucking that.
Call someone, because you, when I used to worry alone, holy fuck. I still do it sometimes, right? I catch myself, Jamie, don't worry, nothing to worry about, and I'll go call someone or do something. Yeah. More people have to, everyone's so chasing what they think they need, when really we should be chasing people and seeing what we can do for them. Fuck, you need a hug? What do you need? Like, fuck, I know it's rough. I'm not, I feel those feelings. It's okay to have a bad day. Yeah. You're not going to fix everything. Go to bed, get a good night's sleep. Tomorrow we try again. It's the best of all happy days. Fucking start over. But myself included, when I first got sober, like, fuck, I want to wake up every day perfect. It's impossible, right? That's what they do. You do the best you can. You surround yourself by good people, and don't be afraid to show love, and don't be afraid to fucking be who you want to be. It's taken me 11 years to be who I am now, and I'm still not who I want to be or authentic yet. I'm kind of scared for that. I'll have like no shirt on ever, living in a forest. Alone, crystals everywhere.
Use your your oils, all your oils.
Oils, I know. Like it sounds like, that sounds like paradise to me.
Oh man, that's good. Results. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. What a story, man. Like, holy moly.
Yeah. Amazing.
It's not about the alcohol. Like I used to, it's not like, it is about the alcohol. It's just, I used alcohol. Some people use food. Some people buy stuff on Amazon. It's coping to get you out of that feeling that developed from whatever happened in your childhood.
Yeah.
Trauma doesn't have to be someone hurting you or physically touching you.
It's so true.
Yeah, I think there's a misconception with when people hear the word trauma, they think it means abuse, like physical abuse or mental abuse. But it's got not.
More than one meaning, is what you say.
Yeah, it could be. It could be something that somebody else would not consider trauma.
I read this thing once, and everything I'm sharing, it's not me. I fucking YouTube it. Nothing is, but it gave a great example. You had a married couple and they had a 4-year-old son. He comes home from work, adult problems, late on the bills. She might lose her job, like adult problems, right? But you have 4-year-old little Johnny, and all Johnny wants to do is go with dad to, let's say, Walmart, because dad's got. So Johnny doesn't know about the adult problems. He just is with his dad. They're walking through Walmart and the dad is all checking his list. He's on his phone. He's stressed out. His manager is calling him. His wife's on his ass, like blah, blah, blah. Johnny looks at his dad. It's like, dad, can I get this toy? And the dad turns around and says, no, Johnny, you don't deserve it. You don't do anything good today, and keeps on walking. But the way that Johnny hears that is, I'm not good enough. I didn't do anything. Today. The dad didn't mean it. The dad is stressed out because back to society, where society is designed for us to feel like the dad's feeling and not to have time to actually sit with little Johnny and say, Johnny, and have a slow conversation to process it. And the dad hasn't done his healing. So if the dad hasn't done his healing, how can you heal your child? It's a cycle that goes, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And that's where the compassion I have for so many fucking people, it's not their fault.
Well, you're right.
They make bad choices, but everyone makes bad choices, but it's not their fault.
No, they die because they don't want to acknowledge the fact that they could be not perfect in their eyes.
Yeah.
Like you said, ego.
So. Yeah. I always get younger girls that I go to a lot of festivals and they look at me as a dad figure, which is great. And they're always like, oh, I'm dating so-and-so. What do you think? I'm like, you want my opinion? Go meet his fucking parents right now. Go see his dad. How does his dad treat his mom? And she's like,
so good.
Because that's what your son's going to be. That's what he's going to be. You learn from your caregivers, right? Mm-hmm. And it's so, so true. And breaking the cycle is hard, but the breaking the cycle is needed. It's needed for society. Mm-hmm. It's needed for us to.
Oh, it's needed for generations, man.
Yeah.
Totally. Totally agree.
And it gets you out of your head, what you think you need or what you think you don't have. The biggest fear is not getting what you think you need or losing what you think you have. It's the biggest fear. Really think about that. Everybody needs something. They don't get it. They're upset. And if they lose something they have, they're upset and they're scared.
Yeah.
We don't know what's good for us. That's the thing.
No, you don't know what's good for us. So true.
The moon's been in the fucking sky for 28 billion years, and we've been here for fucking, let's say, 100 years, and we think we know everything? Seriously, like that, it's insane. The moon fucking moves waters. The moon have seen she has seen everything. But as humans, we think we just know everything and how to do it the right way.
You still have that moon book, Jamie.
I do.
I never got to read that.
Yeah, I read the first page. It's pretty good.
Well, Jamie, I like you, man. You're a good vibe, dude. I really like
good
it.
Good energy.
I relate to it a lot.
I love you guys. Thanks for
sharing.
Wow.
Yeah. Tracy's so quiet, and she even got her phone book to sit on tonight, and we haven't heard it.
I didn't get my phone book. I'm using my webcam now.
Yeah. Oh, it's good. Yeah, it.
It's really good.
I look normal now.
Yeah.
I don't look like
like this.
How long have you guys all been sober?
This October is going to be 3 years for me, or this December. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. 3 years.
November 4th.
That's my fucking birthday. Isn't it? Yeah, my birthday.
That's 2 years for me.
Ah, good job.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny when people say good job to me, I'm like, well, it's like running from a burning house. And they're like, what I'm like, my house was on fire. And
what
I
else was I supposed
out.
To do?
And you can give me a hug and be like, fuck, congratulations. I'm like, thank God.
Oh, shit.
I don't die, but thanks.
Well, you can look at it like, thank God you're alive. Right.
Yeah.
Because like you said, there was a lot of times where you should have been dead. So.
Well, yeah. And like you've been 2 years, Tracy?
Yeah. 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how long you have been sober for. It's the amount of work you've done.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You go to AA, 27 years. It fucking doesn't matter. You're on your ninth marriage.
Yeah.
But you're 26 years.
But the work never ends. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I think somebody who thinks that they've reached the end of the work, I'm like, red flag.
Right. Yeah.
It never stops. Mm.
It so never true. Stops.
I find that there's like a balance between knowing that it never stops and then not trying to reach some sort of destination and not judging myself when I'm not in a good place.
About a destination. That's
it's not
thing.
About a destination. There's always work, but we are perfect right now. Like we're exactly where we're supposed to be on our own personal journey right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Jamie's analogy of the clouds. I love it. I'm going to use it in my own self-talk.
Well, yeah. we have it
cloudy
right
day,
here.
Sunny day.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean your star is gone. It's still there.
That's right. The star is always there. I always say the sun's always there. Just sometimes there's clouds.
Just like in the sky with Mother Nature. I still find it so amazing how Mother Nature, she's so fucking beautiful, but we humans try to control it with weather stations and fucking forecasts. Like she will do what she'll do when she's ready. Like,
and that's another whole podcast episode right there. I'll be glad to join you if you decide to set it up.
Yeah.
I know nothing about the outside. I really, really don't know nothing. I'm so protected what goes in my ears. I don't know any news, nothing. I found
good.
Out
you're not missing
Brady
much
getting a divorce. I found that out at the office.
You found out what?
That Tom Brady might be getting a divorce.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But I have enough in here that I have to take care of than worry about fucking my man crush. You know what I mean? Yeah.
He needs more approval. He needs to keep playing football so he gets the approval that he is seeking. He hasn't gotten enough yet.
I'd give him approval.
I know.
Immediately.
Oh, so Jamie, for our listeners, what three things do you know to be true now that you are sober, more aligned with yourself, more authentic? What are your, top three things that are your truths, what you know to be true?
I always, if you look deep enough inside you, you know the answer.
Ah, that's so good.
You know the truth. And you may not want to hear it. You may cloud it, but if I know the answer, and like that helped me with being vulnerable, that helped me with letting my guard down. Your intuition, it's there for a reason. Your consciousness, it's there to guide you. You just have to really, really trust it. And it'll always give you the truth. It will always give you the truth. And sometimes you don't fall through with it. You're like, well, I don't know. I might go to McDonald's. I know too. She said no, but I might go get five cheeseburgers anyway. It's like
three, four cheeseburgers, please.
I'm being polite for fucking destroy 10. And then, well, it's just be a fucking good person and look through people's eyes. So if you're having an argument, if you're having something, look through their eyes and show what are they feeling. What are your actions looking like when you look at yourself? That's a secret. Like, it's not the secret. Just look through other people's eyes. If you don't know them, if you see a mom walking down the street with three kids, and don't get mad because she's slow crossing the street, look through her eyes. How's her doing? What she's struggling with? We're all struggling with everything. We're all fighting to have a happy life. We might as well just fucking help people along the way. And by doing that, you just fucking be a good human being. And then everything else that just comes with it. Like, it all comes. But just be a good human being. Show compassion. Have empathy. Be grateful. Again, I'm talking like I'm Buddha right now, but like, fuck, I have done. Like, fuck, seriously. Like, it's like I'm fucking running around here like on a cloud nine, but like, trust me.
It's so good though, dude. Like, holy shit.
If you know my people that are in my life, that's how I live. That's how I live my life 24/7.
How we should all live.
Doesn't matter how you're working. Yeah. But everyone has their own journey. The way you live is good for you. The way I live is good for me. As long as they're aligned in some way, there's no one right way to live your life. Just make choices, you know, 9% of the time, and listen to intuition and fucking hug people and tell them they're beautiful. Tell them they look great. Tell them you're proud of them. Just words are so fucking powerful. Look at all the words that we've all been told in our life that have affected us for so many fucking years. Mm-hmm. Now, say something positive with words. You're fucking beautiful. I love your hair. Keep on rocking it. People remember that. And they
do.
Their confidence goes up. Their confidence goes up.
For sure.
They don't know that, you know?
So, and you feel good when you say a compliment or you say something positive to somebody and you see their reaction. The real gift is to you, right?
We're in a society where I have to disclose. I don't care if it's a man. If I see a good looking guy on the street, I'm like, fuck, buddy, you're good looking. Good job.
Dude.
I'm like, buddy, I love the shoes. Look on point, you know? They let their guard down. They're like, oh, yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah.
But with the female, you're in a society where you have to say, listen, it's a totally honest compliment.
Yeah, I hear you.
You look fucking beautiful.
Giving
someone a compliment that, you're so honest, that shouldn't be a compliment. It should be, that's where we are. Hey, thank you for being honest, Lynn.
Oh.
Really? You should
you're be. You're like, honest. It just should be, right? Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
This has been awesome. This was great.
Are there any things you do religiously or routinely, Jamie, that you found has really helped your journey?
My place right now. Yeah. Like, I have a routine. My environment where I live has to
look at all your plants. Hello. I've just been like staring at all of them.
My environment has to be clean, fresh. I always have incense going with energy. I got my essential oils. I'm so protective of the energy around me. I'm so protected of getting people's energy on me because it all attaches. Don't listen to anything on mainstream, no music, no radio, no TV, nothing. My Facebook and Instagram feeds have nothing that I don't want to see. Mm-hmm. I don't want to know what's going on out there. Mm-hmm. And I just try to do good things, I guess. I like to exercise, of course. I like to be in nature and hug trees and be connected to the earth and go to the beach and doing things for me instead of everyone else that I've done with all my life. You know what I mean?
That's good. That's really good.
And knowing that, like, Trace, you just gotta, not every day is gonna be fucking roses. Expectations. Nobody wants to live a life with, everybody wants a life that has no ups and downs, that's perfect all the time. And seriously, again, back to society, they make it feel like that's how you should live. Big house, big exercise, but it's not true. If you have four good days out of 7 days, you're fucking winning.
You are winning. Yeah.
Winning. If you have one day out of a month, I used to have that was a win.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to just try to work to get those days closer together. So you maybe have a week of fucking great times.
Yeah.
And you have a day of shit. And then you'll have a day of old habits coming up and old beliefs, but you catch it because you've been doing the work and you say, that's not true. And if that doesn't work, you call your therapist. If that doesn't work, you fucking go run around fucking in the sun, like whatever you gotta do.
That doesn't work, take a nap.
I think we could have a whole episode on expectations.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
Good one.
Mm-hmm.
expectations. Yeah. When you stop drinking, putting alcohol to your lips, like myself, I thought life would be perfect.
And was it?
No.
I know.
The alcohol is the
easiest. We got to tell the people.
Stop drinking. The alcohol is the easiest part. It's everything else. It's uncovering your emotions, your beliefs, your core beliefs.
It allows you to work on the shit. That's what it does.
Clarity.
Have you guys seen Inside Out?
Yes.
Oh, not Disney. Is it a Pixar movie?
Yeah. One of those. Yeah.
One of the best movies
that
have ever been made. It explains your subconscious mind, core memories, core beliefs. But if you watch it, just use yourself and figure out what your core beliefs are when you were 5 years old. My core beliefs weren't too good.
Wow. Well, I tell Kelly this all the time. I do some meditation sometimes. One of the most recent ones that I did was picture your three-year-old self and you're walking towards your three-year-old self and you're talking and you're getting down and talking to you. I fucking bawl anytime I'm picturing my little girl self. And I'm like, what would I say to her? And how would I treat her? I just lose it. And I don't even understand why, but I'm like, oh, there's some trauma there.
And then on the other side of that, there's some gold.
Yeah.
You're going to learn something.
Sometimes you don't have to say anything to your little child. You just have to hug them. Just be there.
Yes.
Just be
that
there.
Makes me bawl. Like, oh my God.
Just be there and just hug them. Mm. Just be there. I know I talk lots in this, but people don't listen no more. People don't want advice. People don't want to know. People come to you with problems and everyone's like, well, you should do that. No one fucking likes to be told what the fuck to do. Just listen. Mm-hmm. Just listen like I do. So my little child, I'm just there with him sometimes. I give him hugs. I'm like, you're pretty beautiful, Jamie. I know. He tells me, big Jamie. It's kind of but I talk like that because I'm confident, but all my life, I never thought I was worth anything. So it's exciting for me to look in the mirror and maybe 60% be like, yeah, you're look okay today, Jamie. You know what I mean? We all struggle with that fact. Always. Doesn't matter what you do. It's from the inside. You try everything on the outside to look great, but when you heal the inside, the outside just changes automatically.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But society doesn't want that. So what they do is get eyebrows, get this, get that, get everything on the outside, right? Meanwhile, neglecting the inside, because if everybody sat with what they have and worked on themselves, it would be a beautiful place to live. And that's not really what people want.
Well, that's not what society wants, because that's how they distract us from focusing on the inside. Because can you imagine if we all were just walking around in straight peace? We wouldn't need makeup and tattoos and hair this and Botox that and clothes and fast fancy cars and Louis Vuitton bags. And we'd all just be at peace. And that doesn't make money.
No.
Right? I don't know. Where can people find you, Jamie? Are you on Instagram? Do you have Facebook? If somebody listening wanted to, like, I don't know.
Yeah, Jamie Swell. I don't know if you have links, but I'm a big deal. So
we'll put that in the show notes.
Someone wants to sell their house.
Yeah, I don't know, any Winnipeggers.
Hey, Winnipeg, you need a realtor.
I love to help people. I've guided some gentlemen to this beautiful way of life. And I say guide it because I didn't show them anything that
wasn't true. Yeah.
Oh no, I just guide them. I just gave them what was given to me. But I can't think of any other scenarios where when I first reached out to Lori on a Saturday and he's a fucking busy guy, within 20 minutes, he was there. And I'm the same way. If someone reaches out to me, fuck, I don't care what the fuck I'm doing. If I'm there because I know what it's like.
It's amazing.
You pass it on. You pass it on.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you.
Great story.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
Problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please remember to like, subscribe, follow, or share the episode with a friend. You can find us on social media at Laugh Life Podcast on Instagram or join our Laugh Life community on Facebook. Until next time, keep laughing. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Please give us a 5-star rating, like and subscribe, share on social media, and tell your friends. We love getting your feedback and ideas of what you'd like to hear on upcoming episodes of the Laugh Life Podcast.
If you yourself are living alcohol-free and want to share your story here, please reach out.